Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Webtoon Wednesday. This is your host, Jace. Today, I'm going to be talking about a new series, or a relatively new series, has about 20 episodes up on Webtoon. It's called Castle Swimmer, and I have the series creator, Wendy Martin, joining me today. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So I always like to ask everybody when they come on for the first time, kind of about their history with comics before we dive into Castle Swimmer here. No pun intended. So what's your secret origin, so to speak? Did you grow up reading comics? How did you get introduced to them?
Secret origin. I like that. I think it started with newspaper comics. I really wanted to make those first. I think as I was introduced to more forms of comics, I always latched on to the new thing. But I think in high school, I was really into manga at one point. I think I had like a game plan that I was going to like learn Japanese and then like move to Japan and become a mangaka and work for Shonen Jump. I'm glad that didn't work out after finding out what their work schedule is like, but
yeah.
Manga was a huge inspiration. And then I think in college I got really into web comics, and that was actually something that seemed possible to do. So, and that's about it.
So you never really got into the more traditional Western comics, the superhero stuff. That was never a big interest of yours.
No, not really. I was really into the superhero movies, but I don't know why. I was never into I think it was the art style. I really liked the cutesy, big, sparkly eye kind of art style. Not the big, sexy buff men art style.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I actually hear that from a lot of Webtoon creators, which is interesting to me. It's almost like the more ubiquitous nature of comics, Eastern comics, manga,
yeah,
and anime, you know, cartoons, it's for whatever reason, and it's so disappointing to me that it's not as widely accepted here. Despite the popularity of the superhero movies, it still isn't as widely adopted here, let's say. Whereas if you go to Japan, I've never
been,
but I've had a lot of friends that have gone, and they say everybody, like you ride on the subway, and everybody's reading manga. Like everyone's reading sequential storytelling. Everyone's reading comics. So it's so interesting to me. Because I feel like that sort of attitude about sequential storytelling is what leads so many people to want to tell their own stories. And
yeah, I guess in America, it's more of like a geeky subculture kind of thing.
Right, right.
Less mainstream.
Which is still crazy. I mean, these movies are making billions of dollars, and at the end of the day,
but why read it when you could just watch it on the big TV?
Yeah, that might be the other part of it, right? No one or very few people read in comparison, relatively to how many people used to. And I guess the other thing is that I don't know. People think it's hard, and they.
Comics?
To create.
I guess to get into it.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of it, too. That's more of a philosophical difference. Everybody loves stories. That's why these characters do so well. And you know, comics that are adapted for movie or TV seem to do really well. But I think traditionally a lot of manga it's really easy. You pick it up, it's all in one volume. There's not that barrier
entry
where, you know, maybe with Western comics, particularly superhero comics from the big two, you feel like, well, there's 75 years of Superman stories I have to read before I go and pick up the latest issue, you know, this month.
Yes, yes. And it's like connected to all these different stories rather than being one contained thing.
Right. But, I mean, and a lot of people listening to this podcast know this, that's not the case with everything. First of all, comics are so much more than just superheroes. And there's plenty of self-contained stuff out there that you can just pick up and read. So, but let's switch gears here and talk about your title that they should read. As I said, about 20 episodes, I think 23 episodes are out. So, listeners, not 75 years of history, You can pick up a Wendy's comic, get caught up pretty quickly. Why don't you let everybody know what the story's kind of all about?
Well, Cast the Swimmer is Webtoon's third featured mermaid comic. It's about this shark castle that has this this curse that's like killing off their people, and the only way to break the curse is for their prince to slay this kind of legendary shiny merman known as the Beacon. And that's the only way to save his castle and his people. But instead of slaying him, he kind of becomes smitten with him instead. So hijinks ensue.
Yeah, and the first episode of the strip was kind of an introduction to the Beacon, and I wasn't really sure. I didn't even read the little on the Webtoon page. There's like a little blurb that gives you an idea of what the story is about.
Yeah.
You don't always necessarily mm-hmm. read the intro. Sometimes I like to just dive right in, which I did here. So I wasn't necessarily sure what to expect. And the first episode is all about the Beacon, and get to meet him for the first time and see what he kind of deals with in his day-to-day life of being this sort of well, for lack of a better term, for a beacon or an omen or part of the legend of so many of these different underwater societies. And then mm-hmm. in the second episode, it really switches gears, and we start learning about the way the Beacon is tied into the legend of the Shark Castle. Because for so many of the underwater societies, it's the legend is the Beacon's going to come, and then he's going to do this one thing, and our lives are going to be better. And as you mentioned, in the Shark Castle Society, it's like, no, the Beacon is bad, and we've got to kill the Beacon. And that's where it differs. What was it about that legend? You know, as I said, the shark people are kind of the ones that are on the other end of the spectrum, as opposed to wanting to meet the Beacon to kind of raise him up. They're the ones that are looking to kind of destroy him, for lack of a better term. What mm-hmm. made you decide that was the society and the legend that you wanted to focus on of all this big tapestry of legends that you had created?
I guess I was kind of trying to figure out how I could immediately make it extremely dark and jarring. and I liked making... I'm attempting to make this very more gray conflict, I suppose. Mm. I like when romance is mixed in with the forbidden aspects between relationships.
Yeah, it's almost in a way a little Romeo and Juliet, because the prince of the shark people is charged with this duty to kill this guy, and you can tell right away that there's a spark. They're very taken with each other. It's not, it doesn't go just one way. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that dynamic, that difference between the first episode and the subsequent series. Did you think at all about who your target audience is for the series, or were you more interested in just creating the story? And the only reason I ask that, in addition to the story being a little bit dark, the art style also is a bit dichotomous with that, because it's a very playful style, a very youthful style. So mm-hmm. I think, was she going for younger readers this way? Because a lot of the things that you're exploring aren't necessarily like in your face too. It is a little bit behind the surface. So there's the enjoyment you can get out of reading it at the surface, but there's so much more if you want to dig in.
Mm-hmm. The art style is, I guess it could be considered deceiving at first, because it's very playful and welcoming in the first few episodes, and then I think you get to like episode 13 and there's a scene where the character gets his face cut open, so it can be a little bit jarring in the shift there. I guess the target audience, I guess it's just me. I just wanted to make something for myself, and I was hoping people would also like it, but I guess people that don't mind a little bit of lies mixed in with their cutesy characters would be my target audience.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes a lot of sense. The best stories from my experience, are ones where the creator is saying, okay, this is the story. This is what I would like to read, and not necessarily worry about, you know, who, what particular agent or whoever. Has there been a particular, I guess, segment of the audience that you've noticed that are really responding to it? Is it younger? Is it older? Is it male? Is it female? Or is it just a pretty wide spectrum?
I'm not sure. I want to say more female just because it's romance, but I'm actually not sure if that's true or not. I guess, probably teens. I'm not sure. I should really check out the Western stats on their website, but I definitely like the LGBTQ community as well. I guess that's one to give into.
Yeah, and what about some of those themes that you're exploring, like especially responsibility seems to be a big one. You know, we have this prince who's charged with this responsibility to save his people, to, you know, kill this beacon, and he doesn't want to do it, especially after he meets him. And it's something that I think a lot of people can relate to, especially, you know, teens, and that might be where they're responding. Again, kind of similar to the age bracket. Was that something you set out to explore, or did it happen organically as you were building the story, this theme of responsibility?
Kind of organically, I say more. Because I think about, like, maybe a teenager in that position, or just a teenager in general, and I try to, like, show his response by just making him stressed out all the time, just always stressed. He doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, that's another aspect of it that seemed kind of right at the surface that a lot of people would probably relate to, especially when you're talking about a legend like mermaids, and that's this idea of destiny, right? I mean, it's so baked into the story with this beacon who's you know prophesied to be so much a part of so many different people's legends and lore in their history. And it's one of the things that the prince and the beacon have in common, right? They're both kind of trapped by circumstance. They're both, you know, predicated to do this thing. The beacon for so many different, you know, he's part of so many different legends, and he doesn't have free will. He doesn't have life. He doesn't get to, you know, he's swimming around and all of a sudden he gets pulled in one direction, literally pulled in one direction or another, because he's close to a society of which he's part of their legend. And so he doesn't get to just live his life and do what he wants to do. And the same thing with the prince. He's been sheltered his whole life because he has this duty to save his people. So it's something that they connect together. It kind of binds them together. Is that something, destiny versus free will, is that a concept that has always interested you as a storyteller?
Yes. Well, yeah, I'd say so. It was kind of like I want to say the seeds were planted with, like, shows like Avatar: The Last Airbender, that kind of thing. Because with the beacon, I was kind of going for an Avatar-like figure, where they have this the chosen one, and they have to the follow the set path. And I don't know. I guess I just wanted to do something different, or I guess I was thinking of, like, because in Avatar: The Last Airbender, he's like, this kid is like saving the world, and he's like 12. I'm like 20, 24, and I can barely do my own laundry. So I don't know. I guess I wanted to explore a character who's in that position, but they have more selfish goals.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because I think in that way, we can, as a reader, can relate to it, right? I mean, we may not all be destined for greatness and part of you know, the legend and lore of ancient peoples, but we all can relate to, you know, responsibility and you know, free will, and certainly not necessarily being the center of our universe, but certainly a lot of us when we were teenagers, you know, the world's coming to an end if you don't have things go your way, because the world revolves around you when you're a teenager, and that's just kind of who we are as people. So it's pretty interesting. The other thing that really struck me as I read through, getting toward the end of what's currently available, was the fact that you chose to tell these stories of legends and lore, and particularly as they relate to the prince and the beacon, in terms of mer people. You know, you could have done this on land. You could have done this with more of a fantasy setting rather than mer people. What mm-hmm. was it that led you in that direction?
Well, mainly, I don't like drawing feet or legs or stairs. So that was helpful for me. It's also, I don't know, I guess I always like mer people. I think there's like some interesting things you can do, I guess, with the fact that you can kind of swim wherever you want in the plane and you're not stuck to the grounds. I don't know. Always like mermaids, I guess.
It does bring an interesting aspect to the character, because it automatically adds an air of kind of mystique and mystery to the story, rather than they're a little bit different than us, regardless of any destiny or prophecies that they're a part of. even the most normal character that we are introduced to in the story, they're still a mystique to them because they're a mermaid. So with 23 episodes out so far, how's mm-hmm. it been going? Has the story played out as you expected? Have you had any obstacles or hurdles or anything that you realized, oh, that's not going to work, I need to make some adjustments? Or has it been pretty smooth sailing so far?
There's constant adjustments. I'm always having to change things. And sometimes like really big changes, kind of like randomly on the fly. I'll wake up one day and I'll like make this huge dramatic change to a certain character aspect of the story. But usually it's like a step down the road. I think like this first season, I guess, of the story is pretty set in stone right now. But like going, when you're working, drafting like episodes, it's like kind of the small moments that get changed and mixed around a lot, rather than like the overall story, I guess.
Yeah, and so you mentioned first season, so we've seen a lot of the Shark Castle and the Shark people in this story so far. But as I mentioned, we have been introduced to some other societies, some other peoples, and we know the Beacon is part of a lot of their lore and legends. So are we going to see a lot more of the world you've created beyond the Shark Castle? Is that planned for future seasons? Will we see some of that in this season? What are your plans in terms of that?
Yes. Like for the first season, it's going to be mainly what's going on with these sharks. But I think in the next upcoming seasons, we're going to move away from that. And the world kind of opens up a little bit and they see more fish people and what's going on with them. So I'm excited for that.
And you both write and illustrate the story, obviously, which has been actually the case with most of the Webtoon creators I've had on, not a lot of teams, which I mm-hmm. find so interesting. It seems like the platform it has the tools that you need to be able to do that, despite the crunching deadlines that come weekly. But
yeah.
As a creator, what is it that you enjoy more about creating the story? Is it scripting the episodes, putting the words in the mouths of the characters? Is it the visuals? Is it the coloring? Like, what is it that you are enjoying the most right now? Maybe it's changed over time.
I've always been more of a visual person, but again, I'm getting more into the writing parts of it. I think my favorite thing is writing jokes or the little goofy bits. Like sometimes I'll just like structure the whole scene around this one joke that I want to tell, which I don't know if that's a proper way of writing, but that's what I've been doing.
Well, it is true that there is a lot of humor in, as much as you mentioned that it's dark there, but there is a lot of humor in the strip as well. Some might say dark humor, but yeah. Again, I think it's an interesting strip, and part of the reason it's successful is like I mentioned earlier, there is kind of the surface enjoyment you can get of, hey, I'm just reading this story, or you can put so much more into it because there is the idea of these themes of responsibility and destiny and being trapped that we can all relate to, and as we've both mentioned, especially if you're a teenager, you know, and you're doing yeah. things that you have to do, right? You have to go to high school. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, it's you have to go to college. You have to get a good job. And yeah, you can easily feel trapped at times. So if that's something that you like to think about, it's there. It's there to be explored. So I do recommend everybody go and check out Castle Swimmer. It's been exceptional so far.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it, Wendy. Let's change gears here as we wrap up. I don't want to take up too much of your time, and talk about Webtoon as a platform. How did Castle Swimmer end up on Webtoon? Did you start on the Discover side? Did you win one of their contests? Like, how did you come to find your way on Webtoon?
Oh God, I wish I won one of their contests. Well, I didn't know anything about Webtoon up until they like emailed me to be a featured artist. And I was just kind of like posting my comic everywhere. I had it on Tapas and Tumblr and all the places. And like Webtoon was the last place I stuck it on. I didn't even know what Webtoon was really. And I didn't even really do a good job of putting it on there. It was originally formatted for print like pages.
Mm.
And I just kind of slapped it on there, honestly. Like, it was hard to read, and it wasn't formatted to go with the scrolling style. So I was extremely surprised when they when they actually contacted me to be featured. I think I just got really lucky, I guess.
Well, I think it maybe speaks to the strength of the story that you've created. So there, it sounds like there was a little bit of a learning process and an adjustment period, but in terms of readers, did it catch on right away with the fans, or did that take a little bit of time as well?
I think it popped up on their Rising Star. I guess they have like for Discover, there's like some comics will be selected and they'll like show up in this Rising Star. I don't know if you've seen that on their site before. But I think at one point, because I had like 100 subscribers, and then like one day I looked and I had like 6,000 subscribers. I was like, oh, did something happen? Something must have happened. And I think it was the Rising Star program. I'm not sure how they select people for that, but I was very happy to find that happened.
So when you went from 100 to 6,000 seemingly so quickly, did you go and kind of dive into the comments and see what the fan reaction to the strip was at that point?
Yeah, I read most of the comments. They liked it, I think. Most people were saying very nice things. They were complaining about the text being hard to read, but that was the only negative.
And are you one of those creators that likes to answer questions and interact with the readers in the comment section?
Yes. Well, I did that more in past, I think. I still do, but now there's like a lot more comments, and I feel like I should have a little bit of professional separation from it in a way. But I still try to read like most of the comments and interact when I feel like I should.
Yeah, that's kind of the curse of success on Webtoon, right? When you're getting 100 comments an episode, it's kind of easy to respond to every comment and be engaged. But when you're getting 6,000, 10,000, 25,000 comments per episode, it's like, I can have time to make the strip, or I can have time to read and respond to all these comments, right?
It's so true.
I can't really do both. That's great. Have you gotten a chance to meet any of your readers or your fans in person?
No, not so far. I have never been to a convention or a panel or anything like that yet, but hopefully in the future.
Yeah, that's a really great experience from talking to a lot of Webtoon creators and having them on the show. In fact, just recently we had somebody on who had gone to the Houston convention, Comicapalooza, and they had a really great time. So I look forward to that on your behalf. Supposedly from what I understand, people have a great time doing that. So, What about other Webtoon creators? Have you had a chance to meet any of them or to interact with them online? Especially as you mentioned, you were kind of learning on the fly when you first were on Webtoon. Were there any of them that you reached out to and said, hey, can you help me out? Where can I improve here?
I've talked to, I think on Twitter is the most interaction I have with them. And I've like talked to a few on Discord a little bit. I'm kind of intimidated by them, honestly. It's kind of like sitting at the cool kids table.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God. I'm afraid. What if they don't like me? I'm glad. They seem really nice. So everybody's been like really nice and supportive.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully same kind of thing when you get a chance to do a show. And meet some.
Oh God, I'm terrified.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, you gotta just put yourself out there and say, "Man, I have a successful strip on Webtoon where I'm in the same boat." Because they're all thinking the same thing. Like, wait, why am I here with these other super talented creators? It's so funny. It's something that's that a lot of creative people have in common, especially when it comes to comics and sequential art. And it's not limited to people who work on Webtoon or do digital comics. It's even some of the biggest names that work on some of the biggest characters, Batman, Superman, even they, I talk to them and they're like, hey, off the record, I don't know what I'm doing here. Why is anybody reading what I'm writing? It's so funny. It's just, I think it's kind of part and parcel of the personality of a writer that you're always your own worst critic, right? You think you're not doing a great job. So, but that's good
I'm such my worst critic.
But it's great in terms of keeping things fresh and making sure you don't rest on your laurels, right? You always got to keep pushing and exploring and trying to do something new.
Yeah. It's good in that way.
Yes, but I will say that being that Castle Swimmer has been such a success, enjoy it a little bit. I mean, you're doing really well. The strip is great. And as much as you want to keep pushing yourself and never be satisfied, do stop and smell the roses, Wendy. The strip is phenomenal. It really is. So
yes, I'm starting to enjoy it a little bit more now. I think in the past few months, I've been like in a constant state of disbelief, I guess.
Right.
But I'm very happy with how things have come through.
Yeah, it's got like 9. I'm looking at the page right now. It's rated 9.86. That's definitely one of the higher ratings I've seen. So,
is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's good, right?
Yeah, that's really good. That's really, really good. And so, listeners, if you want to know why it's rated so high, definitely go and check out Castle Swimmer on Webtoon. There's links in the show notes if you aren't sure where to go to find it. And I'll also put some links to Wendy's social media if anyone who wants to follow her to find out when new episodes are coming out and all that kind of stuff. Where's the best place to find you online, Wendy?
I spend a lot of time on Twitter, which is Wendy Comics on Twitter. I'm also on Tumblr. I don't know if you should go to my Tumblr. It's just like it's a bunch of asks about weird mermaid anatomy, so I don't know if people would have a good time there. Mainly Twitter. That's what I'll say.
All right, I'll definitely put a link to Wendy's Twitter in the show notes as well. And as I was saying before, the strip is great. I'm really enjoying it. So congratulations on your success, Wendy. Really,
thank you.
Really like what you're doing. It's something that's different, especially with the art style that you have here. And as I said, I find this to be true of a lot of sequential stories, a lot of comic book art and story, is that there's the entertainment value that you can get on the surface, but like a lot of things in life, you can get out of it what you put into it. So if you want to dive deeper, if you want to think about these ideas and themes that are being explored, you certainly can do that. And I tell people this when it's a print comic that they have to go pay for it. It's more value for your money. In the case of Webtoon, it's all free. So it's just how much do you become invested in the story? Because it is there. Mm-hmm. There are ideas and themes that you can spend time thinking about long after you've finished reading the story. So I think it's, as I said, something that's different from a lot of the Webtoon content that's out there, which is really great. So again, I really want to thank you for joining me. It was a pleasure having you on. Is there anything else you want to share with your fans? Anyone who's listening, we'll give you the opportunity here to leave us with a final thought.
Oh my God, I can't think of anything. Thank you so much for having and talking to me, though. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and good luck with the strip. I can't wait to see where the story goes, and I'm particularly interested in subsequent seasons where we can see more of the world that you've built. So, best of luck with the strip, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.